Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it is Monday morning, which means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Right here on 720 WGN. Also, Monday morning, that means my dad will tell a joke later on. And we're going to be talking about, we're going to do another round of night hawking. That's when we talk about movies that we used to love and went back and saw them again, and we don't like them. And I'll explain why it's called night hawking. I have explained it before, but we'll do another round of that this morning as well. So lots of stuff coming up. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can check us out at Twitter, at Nick D Show, and check us out on Facebook. Best way to stay connected, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us now. Colin and Eric join me every week to review the movies. Eric is off this week. He's on vacation in Vegas. So our friend Jim Laskowski, who filled in for Colin when he took a little time off at the beginning of the year, he's going to fill in for Eric this week. So we've got Jim and we've got Colin, and let's welcome these guys to the show. Hello, Colin.
Hello there.
And hello, Jim.
Hey, Nick. It's an honor to be back again.
Well, thanks for filling in. I really appreciate it.
Happy to be here while Eric plays the roulette wheel and bet on 22.
You know, Eric's been 22. I swear to God, if you pick up a Keno card, I'm going to kill you. you know, I just watched that movie last week, Lost in America.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it in, I don't know, a few months, so I figured I'd had to watch it. Really is one of the greatest movies ever made. I mean, it really is. Okay, so Eric is in Vegas. Now, he goes to Vegas like 15 times a year. I mean, it goes a lot, and when he goes, he spends a significant amount of time there. Now, I've never been to Vegas. I've been around Vegas, but I've never been to Vegas because it doesn't seem to really interest me because I'm not a gambling kind of guy. But he did text me Saturday night as I was watching Russell Crowe tank on SNL. He's, you know, great actor, but there are some actors who are not cut out for sketch comedy. And he's one of them. They tried to have him play wacky characters and just was not working. Anyway, so while I'm watching SNL, my phone buzzes and I look and it's Eric. And he texted me and it simply said, about to see Rickles. And I was like, you lucky bastard. So he saw Don.
Yeah, that's worth the trip.
He saw Don Rickles, man, in Vegas. So, and then he texted me afterwards and said it was amazing. So, all right, well, we know where he is. He's in Vegas. But Jim, thank you, and Colin, thank you guys. We got some movies to talk about. I do have Eric's box office report, which I will touch on a little bit later on as well. And he was right in his prediction that, in fact, a Melissa McCarthy movie would beat the Batman Superman movie. So,
not by much, but it is interesting to see that happened.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Like a few $100,000 apart, but yeah, it's like seeing something like Batman versus Superman go down to number two in its third week.
Yeah, it dropped almost 70% last week and then dropped down to number two this week.
Jeez.
Yeah, so word of mouth the word of mouth is truth. So, so there you go. All right, we got some movies.
I really want to see Zootopia outgrow Batman versus Superman.
Wouldn't that be great? And Zootopia.
They're like neck and neck right now.
They're right neck and neck right now. And Zootopia in its, what is it, the fifth week it's been out?
I think fifth or sixth.
Longer
than that, I think.
Yeah, it made $14 million over this weekend. it's doing really well. I mean, this thing is a monster hit. So that would be interesting to see if Zootopia actually beat the Batman movie. So, all right, let's get to some of the movies here that we're going to be talking about. Let me start with Jim. Now, you sent me a text about watching this movie. I didn't get around to it. But, Jim, why don't you start off with this movie called The Invitation?
Ooh.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch it. I got the on-demand thing, and I got your text. I just didn't find time over the weekend to check it out. But I'm interested in it. It's called The Invitation. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're going to like this one. This is the latest film from Karen Kusama, who has had an interesting career going all the way back to Girl Fight, and then did something like Jennifer's Body. So her latest kind of falls under the Hitchcockian category with a little bit of Your Next thrown in for good measure. Mm. The main character, Will, played by Logan Marshall Green, drives with his girlfriend to a kind of like a mansion in the Hollywood Hills where his ex-wife is hosting a rather awkward dinner party with her new husband. And Will hasn't seen his ex in quite some time and hasn't even met her new husband yet, so he's already a bit tense. But he knows everything could be fine and dandy once he gets there and enjoys the wine. And he, you know, wants to make an effort to try and relax for a change. You know, after all, a good portion of his life has been covered in anguish after the death of his child. So it's nice that he's trying to make an effort to go out and socialize after a long stretch of not doing so. And he just wants to try to, you know, build back some relationships as well as create some new friendships. But once he gets there, however, he can't help but be a little spooked out by the behavior of the guests in attendance. And like some random things start happening. You start seeing like a half-naked girl. No one seems to know why she's there. There's a lot of talk about religion going on. So the conversations start getting even more awkward as time goes on, and Will begins to feel more than uneasy with the antics that are taking place. So it effectively builds to a really fantastic climax that I wouldn't dream of giving away. What Kusama here has crafted is a really interesting examination of grief, which actually made it kind of an interesting double feature for me after something like Demolition. But this is more of a psychological horror film that really ratchets up the tension slowly as it goes on, and it really gets under your skin. John Carroll Lynch, who most people would probably remember from Zodiac, shows up here to add to the mystery. And every dinner party guest is very distinctive and memorable. So I was really, really taken with this film. It's very eerie. It's very effective. If you've ever wanted kind of a slasher version of the movie Clue, without all the wacky slapstick, then this is the movie for you. I love movies that take place in one night, one setting. And this is a really interesting, creepy little independent horror film that may not have the highs of something like The Witch, but it's a really engaging ensemble piece with, like I mentioned, a very interesting final act. I highly recommend horror fans check this out. It's on VOD, and I believe it's going to be playing the Music Box next Friday, the 15th.
Mm, okay. All right, cool. That's called The Invitation. You can see it at the Music Box Friday, but you can see it on your on-demand right now. You mentioned John Carroll Lynch. John Carroll Lynch was at Flashback Convention last year.
Oh, wow.
Because he was in American Horror Story. He played that clown in American Horror Story.
Oh, right.
So
yeah.
He's been in a couple of other things. And a lot of people might remember John, because John Carroll Lynch is a terrific actor. He's a great actor. I think a lot of people might remember him as Marge's husband.
Yeah, that's right.
In Fargo,
right. Yeah.
Who is maybe the nicest husband ever. Like, no, I'm gonna get up. I'm gonna make you breakfast. You know that they had such an incredible relationship, and what's still one of my favorite moments in that movie is when she tries to convince him. It's, what does he get, the 3 cent stamp?
Yeah.
Yeah, where she tries to convince him that, you know, the prices of stamps will go up, and people will use the stamp that he got chosen for. But anyway, John Carroll Lynch was there, and he talked about this during his Q&A. I guess they had just finished it. And he was he was speaking very highly of it and said he was very, very excited for that movie. So that's The Invitation, and it's on video on demand. And I will definitely I will find time this week for sure to watch it. Absolutely. So, all right. Well, let's see. Colin, why don't you tell us about Hardcore Henry, which I did not see. And Jim, I don't think you saw it.
No.
Okay.
Didn't get you. And I
just have to say this. You know, the times that I saw the trailer for this movie, I'd watch the trailer and I'd go, there's no way I could make it through 90 minutes of this. There's just no way.
Yeah.
So, Colin, tell us about Hardcore Henry, which, by the way, really tanked at the box office. $5 million
it made over. Surprise, surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Okay, so, this is an action movie with a gimmick that it is told visually from the protagonist's point of view. So it's all shot with an actor or a cameraman wearing a GoPro on his head, presumably. Anyway, he's kind of a Jason Bourne-like cyborg in the film. He wakes up and finds all these mechanical limbs attaching themselves to his body, and he and his wife escape from this lab. And from there, it's kind of a nonstop chase where he has to figure out who did this to him, who the bad guys are, who are trying to kill him, and you know, whether or not he can trust anybody he comes in contact with.
Okay, hang on. We got to take a quick break here, Colin. And we'll take a break. We got the news here. And then after the news, you pick up where you left off. Tell us a little bit more about the movie and then what you thought of it. And that's Colin Suter and Jim Liskowski. I just cut off Jim. So we'll have to call Jim back during the news. It's my fault because I'm an idiot. Jim is sitting in for Eric, who is off this week, and we'll be back next week. So we'll take a quick break, and we'll get Colin's thoughts on Hardcore Henry and learn more about that movie as well. But the news is up next right here on 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower on a Monday morning. It's the Monday morning movie reviews. My dad will be calling in to tell a joke. We're going to be doing a little round of night hawking, talking about movies that we used to love, and then we watch them again, not so much. So we'll do that. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Like us on Facebook, very easy to do. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right, Colin and Jim are here. Jim is filling in for Eric, who's got the week off. And Colin was in the middle of telling us about this new action movie called Hardcore Henry, which is told from the point of view of like a first-person shooter kind of a thing, and it's an action movie. And you were saying, Colin.
Yeah, so it's kind of a Born Identity kind of thing. He's sort of a tool of the government or some sort of seedy underground who knows what. Takes place in Russia, and the whole thing runs 90 minutes if you can stand to sit through this sort of thing for that long, and I barely could. I felt just, at first, it, you know, there are little moments with this technique that are kind of effective. The escape from the lab, which I mentioned earlier at the beginning of the film, where they're him and his wife are, you know, jump into this little escape pod that's aboard this, you know, it was an airplane, I think, or blimp or something. So the point of view of being in that scene is pretty cool and pretty well done. And there are moments during these chase scenes where, you know, that when Henry jumps from a great height, you can kind of feel the landing and you go, ow, you know, there is something visceral and interesting about that in spots. But those are moments are way very, you know, few and far between. The rest of it is this sort of annoying, nauseating point of view gimmick that just doesn't lend itself to the rest of the story. You don't really care about this Henry guy. For one thing, you can't see him. You can't register anything on his face or anything, and you don't feel anything based on what everybody else is feeling because everybody else is overacting. So the acting in this movie matches the style in that it's, you know, over the top and hard to watch. Particularly, you know, the heavy in this film is particularly bad. So you're watching this thing, and it's like watching a video game in that, you know, it's not even as engaging as watching somebody play a video game.
Wow.
Because after a while, it just feels like noise. It just feels like visual noise. And I just kept checking my watch going, how much longer is this? And, you know, this it's the kind of movie, you know, we say this like about Guy Ritchie a lot. This is the kind of movie made by and for, you know, little boys with little toys. It's a movie that hates women very much. So it's very, you know, it's misogynistic and just not really interested in doing anything above and beyond its little gimmick that grows tiresome pretty quickly. So this is easily one of the worst films I've seen all year.
Boy, am I glad I skipped it, man. I was going to go, but everything that you just said, Colin, is exactly what I thought it was going to be just by watching the trailer.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, other than Charlton Copley, who, you know, he's one of those guys who's been on all those Neil Blomkamp movies.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of fun to watch in the second half, but it's not nearly enough to save the film. This is best left avoided, and I'm not surprised at all that it tanked over the weekend.
Yeah, I don't know who this, because, you know, when I saw the trailer, it certainly didn't appeal to me at all. But I was talking to Dan and to Esmeralda here on the show, and evidently people enjoy watching other people play video games, and that in fact is a thing that people do on the net, like with regularity, right?
Yeah.
Dan, they do that. Oh, yeah. Like, there's websites and stuff.
Yeah, and like YouTube channels totally dedicated to that.
Yeah,
practice.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm aware of that phenomenon. I can't imagine why that translates. That would translate well to the big screen, because for me, this is this year's April gimmick movie. Last year it was Unfriended, and I hated that movie too. And this is an April thing now. It's like we got to release a movie that is completely unendurable.
Yeah.
So this is that film.
Okay. Hardcore Henry, no. All right.
I
will not waste my time on that one at all. All right. All right. Jim, why don't we, Tim Roth is in Hardcore Henry. Yeah. I don't know if you knew that or not. I know, Colin, you did because you saw the movie.
Right.
So it's a little Tim Roth double feature this week. Jim, why don't you tell everybody about Mr. Wright?
Certainly. The lovely Anna Kendrick plays a hot mess of a girl. She is rather emotionally imbalanced, with terrible, questionable taste in men, perhaps. But on the day we meet her, she's breaking up with her boyfriend because he enters the house making out with another girl. And she sort of aims to ease her broken heart by going out clubbing with her friends. And they do their best to console her. And then she bumps into a very interesting character named Francis, I believe in a convenience store. And Francis is played by the great Sam Rockwell. So, yeah, there's an interesting meet-cute of sorts in that moment, kind of. And they sort of hit it off almost instantaneously. But, of course, there's a twist, you see. Francis is a hired killer. He's a hitman, but a different kind of hitman. He's recently discovered his conscience. So instead of killing those he is hired to kill, he instead decides to kill the person that put out the hit in the first place, because in his mind, murder is wrong. And the man responsible for training him essentially is Tim Roth, who at one point sort of changes his identity to an FBI agent. And there's also two gangster brothers out for blood, and they turn out to be very dangerous. So you have a little back and forth here with the hitman story and a rather sort of screwball romantic comedy between Sam Rockwell and Anna Kendrick. So you can kind of guess where this all leads to, a rather Tarantino-esque meets Kingsman kind of display of over-the-top violent confrontation, all while trying to be a sweet romantic comedy in the midst as well. This is another script from Max Landis, John Landis' son, and so far the only successful script he's written, at least for me, is Chronicle. Much like last year's American Ultra, the only redeeming factor here are the lively performances from the two leads. And Anna Kendrick and Sam Rockwell have really nice chemistry. They have great scenes together. It sort of helped get you through the more cliche, ultra-violent, very predictable hitman story that we've seen way too many times already. So by the time the final act came around, I was completely indifferent and couldn't wait for this to be over. I found myself rather numb by the experience. And it's sort of like another gross Point Blank kind of ripoff, too. So I don't know. I'm just kind of done with this whole hitman storyline, like a hitman trying to redeem himself, quote unquote. So it's just a huge waste of a great cast for me, and it's a miss, unfortunately.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about it either. Max Landis is essentially covering the same ground that he covered, I think, much more interestingly in American Ultra, which is a movie that I liked.
Yeah.
I actually kind of liked American Ultra. But again, the key to that movie working as well as it did, and Colin, if I remember correctly, you didn't hate it either, right?
I did not hate it. Yeah.
Yeah,
but it's okay.
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Jesse Eisenberg and Kristen Stewart are so great together.
Right.
And if you don't know, you should rent Adventureland and watch that movie immediately. But this is the same. He's covering the same territory here. There's nothing new in here at all. He is Max Landison and the director, who's only worked on a couple of straight to video things, they should be thanking their lucky stars that they ended up with Sam Rockwell and Anna Kendrick. in this movie, because they are two of the most likable and talented people working in movies today. And they, of course, have great chemistry together because they're, you know, and it's kind of a unique, the scenes with them I found to be charming and interesting only in and of that it's two really remarkable performers. There's a scene where he begins like not training her with knives, but they start throwing knives at one another at one point. And that was one of my favorite scenes in the movie. And I thought Anna Kendrick, you know, she's now, I don't know what's going on with Anna Kendrick. Anna Kendrick now has played like a drunken mess in like four movies in a row. I don't know. I have no idea. Starting with Happy Christmas. You know what I mean? It's like, wait a minute, what's going on with Anna Kendrick? What are these parts that she's playing?
She's becoming this generation's Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Oh, well, I'll take that.
Yeah, sure.
And Tim Roth is kind of fun to watch. You know, I mean, he purposely does a really terrible Southern accent when he's undercover as an FBI agent.
That was amusing.
And every time he opened his mouth, I was laughing my head off. The stuff between the two brothers, and one of the brothers is played by James Ransone, who was in The Wire. He was in season two of The Wire. One of my favorite characters in the history of The Wire. And he's a terrific actor. He was also in Generation Kill. He's worked on a lot of stuff with David Simon. He's a terrific actor. But this stuff between the brothers just doesn't work. There's like this like rivalry between the two of them. And they want to, the younger one wants to kill the older one. And then that's played for total laughs, I think. I think they were going for laughs in those scenes. I'm not quite sure. Either way, it doesn't work. Is it Raza? Is that how you pronounce his name?
RZA,
yeah. from the Wu-Tang Clan. He's in it. He's funny in it. I mean, he's a guy who gets, all these guys have these incredible weapons, you know, these automatic weapons, really, you know, top-notch stuff, and they give him a shotgun with, like, just buckshot in it. and he gets some mileage out of that. So it's just not new. It covers the same exact ground, I think, of a much more interesting movie, American Ultra. But there are things in it that I liked, and it was all because of the cast. There are things that Tim Roth does that are fun to watch. Anna Kendrick and Sam Rockwell are great together and separate. But you're right. It gets really tiresome after a while,
sure.
Jim. And I watched it on the video on demand, and which is fine because, you know, I could pause it and go to the bathroom and come back. You know, so maybe I would have liked it less had I actually spent $14 in a movie theater to see it. So. Anyway, but I do not recommend it, despite the fact that Sam Rockwell and Anna Kendrick are great, but they've been great in other movies as well. So see those. All right. So no to Mr. Wright. All right. We'll take a quick break. You guys hang on. All right.
All right.
Colin and Jim are here, and we'll take a quick break and we'll come back. We got more movies to review and we'll talk about the box office as well. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN with the Monday Morning Movie Reviews, and we'll be right back. All right. Welcome back. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Eric is off this week, so Jim Laskowski is filling in, and Colin is here as well. And let's get back to the movie reviews. We got box office to talk about as well. So let's get back and welcome the guys back to the show. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
All right. Colin, tell us about Miles Ahead.
All right. Well, this is our third biopic, music biopic.
In 2 weeks, yeah.
In the last couple weeks.
Right.
And this is Don Cheadle's passion project about Miles Davis. Cheadle co-wrote the screenplay and directed the film, and he also stars in it as Davis. And this is another biopic that refreshingly strays from the usual formula of, you know, cradle to the grave or, you know, present day story structure. This one covers one period in Davis's life. And it's usually the most interesting part of the biopic, and that's the long way down part, where the artist is kind of losing everything or, you know, lost what he once had that made him successful. It takes place in the late 70s, and he has, Miles Davis, lost his stature in the limelight, but still has his bravado. He's pursued by a Rolling Stone reporter, played by Ewan McGregor, who wants to interview him. And about, you know, what he's been up to over the last several years. And there's also a matter of the record company that is trying to get their hands some session tapes that Davis made that he does not want to hand over. That leads to a subplot about a manager trying to use the session tapes to help out a junkie client of his. And the film does flashback also to periodically throughout to Davis when he was married to Frances Taylor and what that relationship was all about. So this is a case, again, of just like with the Chet Baker movie last week, where I know nothing about, I mean, I know obviously who Miles Davis is and that he's a legend in the jazz world, but I'm not a jazz guy, so I don't know, you know, the life story stuff. So I go into this movie cold without having done any research, and I find out later that none of the stuff involving the Rolling Stone reporter or the session dates is true. None of that is based in fact. It's all pretty much fabricated for the film.
And you know why? I was talking to Nell Minow, the movie mom, and she interviewed Cheadle. And the reason why the McGregor character is in there, and that's the structure of the movie, is because he was told, Cheadle was told by the studio and by the production that he needed another white person in the movie. He needed to share the screen with a co-lead who was white.
Interesting.
That's why he's in the movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now, maybe that, no pun intended, colors my opinion a little bit. But nevertheless, watching the movie when I did, you know, cold, not knowing anything about the production or any of that stuff, I found myself quite taken by it. This is a case of, you know, like I called it a passion project of Cheadle's, and you can tell it's a passion project. You can tell he's really invested in this heart and soul. I think this is the first thing of his that I've seen that he's directed. It's his first major film directorial, you know, it's his directorial, not his debut, but his first major thing he's directed. And I think he does a pretty commendable job displaying, you know, the sort of insanity, you know, of Miles Davis, is what it probably was like at the time, just without the story, you know, making the movie kind of feel like jazz, and the way it's put together, the way it's edited and shot, and the way it kind of just, the way it goes back and forth through time, it does have this kind of loose structure to it that makes it, you know, a little more interesting than your usual biopic. I think his performance is really terrific. And, I thought McGregor was okay, too. But it's obviously, it's Cheadle's movie. It's a showcase role for him. But it's one that I really felt that he put a lot of himself into. And I think that it comes across. It's infectious in a way. You know, this is the idea of, you know, creating this fake story, does it work? You know, I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence about that. On one hand, I'm always happy to see a biopic, you know, stray from the formula, you know, but on the other hand, when I watched it, I thought I was watching something that was at least 70% a true story, like most biopics. I expect a little bit of fabrication, you know, in when these stories are being told for, you know, exaggerations and stuff. I expect that. I don't expect 100% true. You know, so thinking back on it, it's like, well, maybe it kind of doesn't work. But at the time I was watching it, it worked pretty well for me. Based on the directorial effort and the performances, just kind of the sheer energy of it, I am recommending it.
Okay. All right, Colin, Jim, hang on. I saw the film. Jim, you have not.
Not yet.
Okay, and I will give you my review, but we got a break here for the news. So you guys hang on a second. We'll take a break for the news. When we come back, I'll tell you what I thought of Miles Ahead, which is the Miles Davis biography, co-written and directed by Don Cheadle and starring Don Cheadle. And we'll get to that right after the news, which is coming up next. When was the last time you were in Door County? When was the last time you were in Door County this time of year? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude, 2 to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. Steve Grzanich at 5 o'clock with the opening bell and the great Steve Cochran at 6. It's Monday. That means my dad will call in later on and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. And we are in the middle of the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress is off this week. He's on vacation going to Vegas and seeing Don Rickles. So Jim Laskowski is filling in for him this morning, as he did when Colin took some time off the beginning of the year. So it's Colin and Jim and myself reviewing the new movies. And let's get back to that. Welcome back, Colin. Welcome back, Jim.
Hello.
Okay, we just heard Colin's review of Miles Ahead, which is the interesting biopic about Miles Davis that Don Cheadle co-wrote, directed, and stars in as Davis. Colin, I got to agree with you. I think I like it even more than you did. I don't know as much about Miles Davis as I did about Chet Baker last week. Mm-hmm. The only reason I really knew about Chet Baker is because I discovered him through Let's Get Lost, that fantastic movie, which I hope you get to see, Colin. Because as a documentary filmmaker, I would be interested to see. Did you see it?
No, but the Netflix disc showed up in my mailbox yesterday. So.
Please let me know what you think. Text me after you see it.
Yeah,
I'm very curious because that movie, not only did I think it was great and sort of the quintessential story of Chet Baker, but it also really turned me on to his life and his music, and that's why I knew about it. And I probably knew about as much about Miles Davis as you did going into this movie. I did, however, because I had interviewed Nell before I saw the movie. I did, however, know that a lot of it is fictional and some of the characters are completely made up, including Ewan McGregor's character. But I got to say that despite that, this is a really well-made film. Cheadle has directed. The only thing he's directed, he's done a few episodes of House of Lies, the show that he does on Showtime. He's directed a few episodes of that. But this is a pretty amazing feature film debut. I think it's very imaginative. I think it's very unique. He not only is he terrific in it, but all the other actors are very, very good in it. But this really is Cheadle's movie, Colin, as you know. I mean, it's just, it's all about him. And man, he knocks it out of the park. He is terrific in this movie. Again, just like last week with Ethan Hawke, I'm thinking to myself, why would these movies come out in April? Because both of these movies contain Best Actor nominees, as far as I'm concerned. Now, I know it's very early in the year. It's only April, but I'm thinking maybe holding this movie back to like October, Cheadle would have a better chance. And I don't know what the odds are. I think it's such a great performance. And Cheadle is well known, you know, obviously in the industry, and has been nominated several times for Academy Awards. I still think that there's a strong possibility that Cheadle will get nominated for this. Much better possibility than Ethan Hawke for his movie.
Yeah, I mean, I could also see these two movies getting lost in the shuffle.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of movies, come out in September and October, good though they may be, they seem to, you know, run out of air by the time, you know, November, December come. And, you know, there's still that sort of short attention span in Hollywood that is hard to avoid. Maybe that'll change now that they've sort of, you know, gotten rid of some of the old faces and brought in some new ones.
Yeah.
Maybe that will change this year. It would be great to see because I think Cheadle's commitment to this film is apparent. And, and really, I would like to see what else he directs after this. If he directs anything else after this,
I agree. I'm with you 100% on that. It is Cheadle's movie, and he runs with it from the direction of it, which is really smart and really creative and really well done. He's good with actors, and his performance is just one of the best of the year. It is as good as you would think. When I first saw the trailer for this movie, I'm like, oh my God. I mean, talk about the absolute right actor for this role. And he's the guy. And he's absolutely amazing in it. So, you know, it's funny. I was watching, as you guys know, every morning when I get home from work, the first thing I do is I watch the Johnny Carson show from the night before, because these Johnny Carson reruns on Antenna TV are pretty amazing. And Friday morning, it was an episode from early 1992, January 1992, and Gene and Roger were on. Which is always now really sad, you know, and very melancholy. But it was a wonderful segment that they did, and they were great, and they were, you know, they did the Gene and Roger thing, you know, which is they kind of made fun of each other. And then they talked about movies, but they did it in a very intellectual, great way watching these guys. And it was funny because they were promoting a show that they were doing, a special edition of At the Movies, in which they said, hey, Academy, don't forget about these movies and don't forget about these performances, because the nominations were about to come out. And so they did this special, and it was for the films of 1991. And so Gene was very high on Rambling Rose. Like now Rambling Rose came out in the fall, and he was very high on Rambling Rose. I hope people don't forget about it, and blah, 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 which was all perfect. And they keep talking about movies. Like, for some reason, Gene went, like the movie that had just come out at that time that he was most high on was Grand Canyon. Like, he was really going on and on about Grand Canyon. And then they kept talking about what we were just talking about, Colin, about how the Academy has this incredible history of not remembering movies that come out before September.
Right.
And yet, they're saying, well, who, and so Johnny was like, well, who do you think is going to win? What do you think is going to win Best Picture? And both of them, on a dime, both of them immediately said Bugsy. Which I found really, really interesting. They both said, oh, yeah, Bugsy's, you know, just came out. It's critically acclaimed, and it's going to go to Bugsy. And not one time during this conversation did anyone mention Silence of the Lambs.
Very interesting.
Which I found really fascinating, and exactly what we're talking about. But, you know, Silence of the Lambs came out in February. Came out on Valentine's Day. It came out on Valentine's Day. And so I just found it really interesting to watch that and look historically back at that. You know, the movie that won Best Picture that year was a movie that came out almost a year earlier.
Yeah, I mean, it does happen. It's the rare thing. Like, Crash was the same way.
Yeah.
But, you know, more often than not, it goes to something a little more recent. And, you know, especially, you know, in the last few years, there's just this sheer volume of movies that come out. It's so easy to get lost in the shuffle now more than ever.
And as you guys know, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. As you guys know, that it really gets crazy around October. Like, I mean, seriously, it gets to the point. I mean, I had on my coffee table throughout the late fall and early winter, I had a stack, a giant stack of screeners on my coffee table. You know,
I had that same stack. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just insane. The sheer amount of movies that come out between October, you know, and even into January. So it's easy to forget stuff like this. But I hope people remember Don Cheadle at the end of the year and Miles Ahead. I really do.
So, yeah.
All right. Jim, why don't you tell us about Demolition?
Sure. This is the latest film from director Jean-Marc Vallée, who gave us Dallas Buyers Club with McConaughey, Wild with Reese Witherspoon, and my personal favorite is his underseen Café de Fleur. This time he's recruited another great actor. Jake Gyllenhaal stars as Davis, a young widower unable to come to terms with the death of his wife, who was killed in a car accident while Davis survived. And despite the urgings of his father-in-law, played by Chris Cooper, who also happens to be his boss, Davis is just unable to get professional help to cope in any healthy way. He's not really getting through the grieving process. He's more in denial of sorts. Instead, he sort of becomes fixated with taking things apart, literally. The refrigerator his wife had asked him to repair, he takes that apart along with various furniture, lamps, even the bathroom stalls at his office. He just deconstructs his belongings as a way to deal with losing his wife. And he attacks things ferociously with sledgehammers and even at one point a bulldozer. He also befriends a rather eccentric single mom, played by Naomi Watts, who is a customer service rep for a vending machine company that Davis starts writing rather revealing letters to because he lost some money at the vending machine that his wife was in the hospital. And so that's an interesting subplot that takes place. And there's also a relationship with Naomi Watts' son, who is kind of androgynous and sort of struggling with his potential bisexuality, which is a story very similar to Vallée's acclaimed sort of French film Crazy. And I think that subplot is a little tacked on, but I certainly love the fact that the relationship between Gyllenhaal and Watts remains platonic, which was a rather welcome surprise given this kind of film. And in a lot of ways, Demolition integrates a lot of the themes and especially the editing style of his previous films as well. And I happen to be a fan of pretty much all of his movies. Some I like more than others, but this one, you know, I actually really found myself emotionally engaged by. I love his use of pop songs and this sort of kind of frenetic editing that jumps back and forth in time. That, you know, in some instances, does recall Malick in the way it portrays memory. And he just always gets great performances with his actor. But with all that in mind, I do, you know, think that a movie about survivor's guilt and grief has been done before, particularly with the movie we all love, Peter Weir's Fearless. So there really, again, is a whole lot of originality here, but I was still caught up in it. I was emotionally invested, and I thought both Watts and Gyllenhaal were great. And since I'm a fan of this director, I'm giving this movie a mild recommendation. If you just want to see some great acting and a well-edited portrayal of the grieving process, I'd say give this a try, even if it's nothing groundbreaking.
Okay. All right. I'll tell you what I thought of it. We got to take a break, though. Colin, Jim, hang on a second. Okay. And
all right.
We will come back, and I'll tell you what I thought of Demolition. The latest movie starring Jake Gyllenhaal. That's coming up right after we take a break here. Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to the show. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. We're going to be doing a round of Nighthawking a little bit later on. When that's when we talk about movies that we used to like, went back and watched them again and went, uh-oh, that's not good. So we'll do some of that. My dad's going to call and tell a joke. We're in the middle of reviewing the new movies. Before the break, Jim told us about Jake Gyllenhaal's new movie, Demolition, and what he thought of it. And now I will tell you what I thought of it. Jim, I'm glad that you mentioned Fearless, because this deals with a lot of the same issues. Because it's about someone who goes through this traumatic event and then just cannot identify with normal, you know, relationships. You know, and is obviously damaged by what they've gone through, and it's affected the way he lives, like the way mm-hmm. this character lives in normal society. So Fearless dealt with that on a way, you know, I think a much more profound level than this does. Fearless is one of my favorite films of all time. And, but it does deal with that kind of stuff, which I find I'm immediately drawn to that kind of stuff. You got an actor like Jake Gyllenhaal, who I think is great, and you think he's great in this. Naomi Watts is great. Chris Cooper is good. The kid is really good. This kid, Judah Lewis is his name. He's really good. And that relationship that they have, that Jake Gyllenhaal and Judah Lewis has, kind of reminded me a little bit of, you know, what the kind of relationship that Rosie Perez and Jeff Bridges have in Fearless, where they're these kind of two weird characters that are kind of living in their own world apart from what is, you know, what is typically normal, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And how they bond in that regard. And I thought, and I, like you, I like the fact that Naomi Watts and Jake Gyllenhaal did not have any kind of sort of romantic interest in the film. I don't think that would have worked at all. I think this movie, it has some problems. I don't think it's perfect, but I think Gyllenhaal is really great in this. I too am a fan of the director. I particularly I think the best movie he's directed is Wild, and he is capable of getting really good performances out of his actors. There's no question about it. I think Wild is the best thing that Reese Witherspoon's ever done, and I think that McConaughey obviously is incredible in Dallas Buyers Club, and I think Gyllenhaal's amazing in this movie. And I think the entire cast is. Again, it doesn't really cover any new ground, but it does it very well. It's an interestingly made film. I like the director, and I really, really, really like Jake Gyllenhaal. And if you're a fan of Jake Gyllenhaal, I would say see this movie for sure. So, okay?
All right. I completely concur. I just love his editing style
in
all of his movies. Wild and this sort of just have that, the way it flashes back and forth. It's just, it's done with a rhythm that I really, really
No, he makes good films. He makes interesting movies, I think.
Yeah.
So, all right, Colin.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about the big box office winner this week, The Boss.
All right. Well, this is the latest Melissa McCarthy comedy. And here she's kind of a Donald Trump / Martha Stewart type money guru who inexplicably sells out shows at the United Center because she's rich. she gets caught up in a money scandal that totally bankrupts her and strips her of all her wealth and power. And she finds herself moving in with her former assistant, played by Kristen Bell, who is a single mom with a 12-year-old daughter who is in a Girl Scout troop, which inspires McCarthy to come up with a new kind of Girl Scout cookie business. Instead of cookies, it's brownies. And overnight, it becomes a kind of a local sensation. Peter Dinklage is in the film as a former, you know, business nemesis of hers. Tyler Labine plays an eventual love interest of Kristen Bell. And the movie is directed by Ben Falcone, which is was Melissa McCarthy's husband and has been in almost every film she's been in since Bridesmaids. And it's also the second one that he's directed. The last one he directed was Tammy. And I think now we can see that there are good Melissa McCarthy comedies and bad ones. There seems to be no consistency here. The good ones being Spy and Bridesmaids, of course. And I like The Heat enough to say it's a good. I laughed enough during that one.
I like The Heat. I think The Heat's pretty terrific, actually. I'm a big fan of that movie. Not so much with Spy. But Spy's
okay.
The best thing in Spy is Jason Statham.
Right, right. Both of those movies are directed by Paul Feig.
Right.
And then you got Identity Thief, and then Tammy, which is directed by Ben Falcone. And this one directed by Ben Falcone. This one definitely falls into the latter category. This is McCarthy playing sort of a non-character. She's like in a sketch, like a bad SNL sketch, and she's not really playing a character that's worthy of the audience's, investing in to hope, in hopes that she'll redeem herself. We know eventually she will, of course. The movie sets itself up for that, but it doesn't. It happens too late in the film, and. There's just nothing. It's not a real character. There's nothing, worth investing in. It's pretty shrill. It's pretty the comedy is bombastic. It's loud equals funny. It's got that kind of aesthetic to it. It's got a really like questionable value system, in terms of the lesson or whatever. The lessons that it preaches and how McCarthy does eventually redeem herself. It's pretty forced and pretty, wait, really? What is this movie about? Peter Dinklage has moments. I think he kind of makes the movie, a little bit better. Kristen Schaal has a role in it she's pretty wasted. She's, one of my favorite comedians working today. And she doesn't really know what to do with the role she's given. So this is definitely, I hate to say it again, but it's the other movie this week that could very well end up on my worst list at the end of the year. I just think this movie is a terrible comedy, which is, second to Hardcore Henry, the hardest thing to sit through. Not recommending.
Okay. All right, Jim, we're going to find out what you think. I'll tell you what I thought of it as well. We're talking about the movie The Boss with Melissa McCarthy, which was a big winner at the box office, grossing over $23 million this past weekend. And we'll tell you, Jim and I will tell you what I thought of it and we thought of it as well. We're going to take a break here for the news. And after the news, we'll come back, talk about that, and then tell you about the box office for the week. All right, it's Nick DiGilio and 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Morning. Here till 5 a.m., Steve Grzanich in the opening bell at 5, and then at 6 o'clock, the great Steve Cochran will take you through the morning. We are reviewing the new movies, and it's Jim Leskowski is in for Eric, who's off this week. He'll be back next week, and Colin Suter is here. Colin just told us about the new Melissa McCarthy comedy, The Boss. Not good, right, Colin?
Not good at all.
Okay. Jim, what do you think?
I echo Colin 100% on this one. Forced is an apropos word. It just feels like assembled out of, a throw it against the wall, see if it sticks kind of bits. And it's rather sloppy than a well-constructed kind of comedy. It's like a Scrooge meets Troop of Beverly Hills redemption story. It's very generic. The comedy is just cartoonish, and much like Tammy, I could not get invested in the lead character whatsoever, because like Colin said, it's more of a sketch, of a character, not somebody that's fully three-dimensional. I did also chuckle a couple of times at Peter Dinklage, who's enjoyable to watch in pretty much everything, and particularly a flashback moment involving lots of cocaine. But this does not hold a candle to McCarthy's work with Paul Feig. I think when they work together, there's a lot more magic in what they bring to the screen. But this is a pretty lazy and unfunny experience overall. McCarthy can do so much better than something like this.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to make it boring because I agree with both of you. This is a pretty bad film. It's not funny, and I don't like to see someone of talent like Melissa McCarthy just coast. And that's all she's doing, man. That's all she's doing in you know a lot of these vanity projects that she and her husband have put together. And I think she's much better than that. And I think she has the capability of being better than just this one-dimensional loud, you know, sort of over-the-top, vulgar character. The sight gags are really stupid. The physical stuff is over-the-top. You know, nobody's really got... I happen to love Kristen Bell. I think she's great, and she does nothing. Really doesn't have anything to do with this. Dinklage is the only guy. You guys mentioned Dinklage. I may as well mention him, too. Because Dinklage is kind of the only guy that brings life to this stuff. And Melissa McCarthy is just going through the motions. She's got a bag of tricks, you know, and she knows that with those bag of tricks, she's at least capable of getting some laughs, and that's all she does here. It's really lazy stuff. It's lazy writing. It's inept direction, and it's just lazy performances. It's just Melissa McCarthy doing as little as possible and as broadly as possible to try to make people laugh, and it just doesn't work. Doesn't work at all. I was happy to hear some Melissa McCarthy news, though, this week that she is in fact coming back to Gilmore Girls. She will she will be returning as Suki to Gilmore Girls. So that's some good Melissa McCarthy news. I'm not sure I quite know what to make of this Ghostbusters thing. I've seen now.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'm seeing a few trailers, and I don't know. But again, it's Feig, and it's, you know, everybody except Leslie Jones, who I don't think is funny at all. But you know, Kristen Wiig and Kate, you know, McKinnon and Melissa McCarthy, they're very, very funny. And it's Paul Feig, so I have hope for it. But I'm not sure. I mean, I've been watching the trailers for it, and I'm thinking, man, I don't know. If this is the best they got, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I will say there's one funny bit in The Boss that does make me chuckle when I think back on it. There's a scene where they're going, I think it's Kristen Bell and the other guy, they're going out on a date, and he says something like, he says to the waiters, like, give me your best bottle of wine that costs, you know, between $30 and $40, whatever. The guy says, yeah, I'll send my guy out to Walgreens to get that.
Right.
I thought that made me laugh.
Yeah. So, you know.
There you go. I just saved everybody.
There, you just saved 12 bucks for everybody.
Yeah.
So, all right.
That's
so,
the funniest bit in the film.
So, do not see The Boss. Of the stuff that came out this week, you know, I'm of the stuff that I saw, the thing that I liked the most was Miles Ahead. That would be my choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Jim, what would yours be? Would it be?
Oh, The Invitation is well worth
the Invitation
for horror fans.
All right, cool. Now next week we've got Jungle Book, the live action remake, and I happen to that movie's Jungle Book was a big movie for me when I was a kid.
Me too, actually. Yeah. It was the first movie too. I ever saw in a theater.
It is one of the first movies I ever saw in a theater, and one of the first movies, animated Disney movies that really captured my imagination. So I've been kind of dreading this movie because I have such, as you know, Colin, you have such an emotional connection to this as a kid.
Yeah.
You know.
So. And we've had, a couple other, I know there was a live action version in the 90s.
Yeah.
Mid-90s. Was there another one since then, or is this the first one?
I think this is the first one since then. I'm almost positive. Yeah.
All right.
Criminal, the new Kevin Costner thriller, which looks weird. That comes out Friday. And Barbershop, The Next Cut.
I don't recall ever seeing Barbershop 2.
Oh, really?
I don't think I ever did.
Now,
the first one.
Did you see Beauty Shop?
I did not see Beauty Shop.
Oh, because that's
pretty sure I did not see Beauty Shop.
The whole series is, you know, the two barbershops and Beauty Shop. Now this one continues.
Right.
You know, I like the first one. I like the first Barbershop. And the second one had some moments, and I think this one will probably just have some moments. And, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, what everybody loves about these movies is Cedric the Entertainer. as the old dude, you know, who says politically incorrect things. So that's what we got to look forward to. The box office over the weekend, The Boss, $23.4 million, and it beat out, just by several hundred thousand dollars, Batman versus Superman, which continues to drop hugely. And, you know, like by record numbers, and it keeps falling faster and faster and faster. And Warner Brothers is really trying, you know, they're spinning their wheels trying to figure out what's going on and how to spin this. But it's not doing well. Zootopia, $14.3 million. Number four is My Big Fat Greek Wedding, $6.4 million. Number five, Hardcore Henry. Only Colin sat through that. $5 million. Was there a crowd when you saw it? Did you go to a screening?
I saw Saturday morning at the Webster Place, and I want to say there was about 10 people besides me in there, which I was really happy to see it at Webster Place because they got those nice reclining seats
right
now that you can just kind of adjust yourself. So I think we're all just kind of curled up in our seats, just, you know, kind of silently napping during parts of this film.
Yeah, I did the same thing when a lot of the theaters that I go to, many of the theaters don't have the electronic recliners, you know, the little automatic recliners.
Yeah.
But when I went to go see Sisters, the terrible Amy Poehler Tina Fey movie, I saw it at 600 North Michigan, and they've now put those in there.
Mm-hmm.
So I was fine. It was a terrible movie, but I was like, yeah. You know, I was like practically laying down watching that movie. So, So there's that. All right, Miracles from Heaven, $4.8 million, followed by God's Not Dead 2, with $4 million. So two faith-based movies there. Number eight, the Divergent series, Allegiant, $3.6 million. It's total $61 million. That is massive drop off for what, you know, they expect to, you know, they expect it to make Hunger Games numbers.
Right.
Number nine is 10 Cloverfield Lane, which made $3 million, bringing its total up to $67 million, almost $68 million, making it, it's made more money than Divergent. So there you go. And then number 10 is Eye in the Sky, which has just not done well. $2.8 million, 10.4 total. And Jim, did you see 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Yeah, I really liked it quite a bit, actually.
Yeah.
I thought the performances were great.
Yeah, it's Goodman is just the king.
But people should really make an effort to try and see Midnight Special. It's opened a little wider.
Yeah, Midnight Special, which we talked about last week. Oh, you saw it, Jim. You loved it, right?
Oh, yeah, I loved it. It's Jeff Nichols, man. Yep. You know, he's the king right now.
I loved it, too, man. And I'm actually a massive fan of Everybody Wants Some. I seem to be in the minority on that.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it.
I absolutely loved it. So
yeah, it's good.
All right. Okay, so those were it. Now, before we let you get out of here, and we'll get you out of here, I'm about to jump into, in just a few minutes, we're going to be doing some night hawking. Colin, do you have a movie that you used to like that you watched again and went, ugh?
Yeah, the one I always go to, and I should have thought about this a little bit more, but the one I always go to is The Goonies. And I'm not supposed to say that. I'm in the age group where I'm supposed to, like, have a poster of that movie somewhere in my apartment.
That's right.
On my wall. And I don't, because this movie just doesn't, even on a nostalgic level, it just kind of grates on my nerve after a while.
I'm with you. I didn't like it from the get-go, though.
I loved it when it came out.
Okay. Jim, what about you?
You know what? That's a good choice, actually. I mean, I don't dislike it the way you guys do, but it's one that's gone down in my mind is definitely The Goonies. And for some reason, as a kid, I really loved Superman 3. You know, I think I attribute that to, you know, I was a huge Richard Pryor fan even as a young kid.
Yeah.
I rewatched it recently, and it's pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. Yeah, no, yeah. It is. Okay, all right.
It's not as bad as Superman 4. But...
No. Or as bad as Batman versus Superman, which is out right now. So there you go. All right. Well, thank you, guys. And Jim, thanks for sitting in. We really appreciate it, man. Great job.
Oh, and also great job with your appearance on Vinyl Emergency.
Oh, yeah. I was on Vinyl Emergency, which is Jim Hankey's podcast. Tell everybody about your podcast network real quick, Jim.
Oh, yeah. Everybody should go check out nowplayingnetwork.net. We also got a brand new show called Supporting Characters, hosted by Bill Ackerman, which, you know, for movie fans, it's another great interview-based show with a lot of interviews with historians, journalists, and authors. So Supporting Characters is a new show that people can check out, along with Movie Madness, Director's Club, and, of course, Vinyl Emergency. So
Vinyl
there's
Emergency.
A lot of great shows there.
Yeah, and if you're interested, I'm interviewed on the latest episode of Vinyl Emergency, and I had a great time. Jim is, in fact, going to be on the show this week to talk about Record Store Day. So there you go.
Yeah, for Record Store Day.
You got it.
That's great. And you'll be on, hopefully, on Director's Club next month for the Scorsese episode.
For the Scorsese episode, yes. Colin, we'll talk to you next week, my friend.
Sounds good.
All right. See you guys later. Jim, again, thank you. And there you go. That's Eric Childress will be back next week, where our Monday morning movie reviews will continue.